Aloha. This is Serge Kahili King.
We're talking tonight about peace and love. We want to get into those very deeply to find out very exactly as we can what they are and how we can bring them about in our lives. Peace and love. Those words are used a lot and they sound good and they often evoke a nice positive response in people when you say them. But saying them and getting that nice little feeling for that moment is one thing. But learning how to live them so that these become the reality of your whole life is another thing. And there's a lot of ideas and actions and beliefs in the world that seem to work against it. So we want to talk a little bit about those too. Let's take one thing at a time. Let's take peace. Try and get a better understanding of it. When we say the word peace in English, you know, often why the thing goes along with peace and quiet. Okay? The two kind of go along together. But other than that, we mean, okay, no conflict. But it doesn't bring a lot of other things with it as far as deep meaning with it. I think we can go to the Hawaiian word for that and get some other ideas from it. We have the word is malu. That's M-A-L-U. And malu has a number of interesting things about it. It is a state, the word ma means a state of. Okay, so this is a state of, alu means together, combined, joined. It's a state of joining, a state of togetherness, a state of being in which there is a joining. Okay? I mean, even anger is a state of being, for instance. But peace is a state of being in which there is a joining, there is a oneness. And in that kind of a state, of course, there is no conflict. Okay? There is, if you like, a cooperation. Alu, by the way, is a word that also can be used to mean to cooperate. And so what you've got here is an immediate understanding of the word. Now, it also contains some interesting other ideas that go along with it, an idea of strength. And the idea here is very interesting because you know from some of the work that we've done, especially with muscle testing and things like that, that where there is conflict in the mind, that conflict manifests in the body. And the body gets weaker. It gets weaker because of the conflict. Peace, because there is no conflict and everything is joined and everything is one, is then a state of strength. And as we know from our, again, things with the muscle testing, when there is no conflict in the mind, there is no conflict then in the body, and for instance, when we're doing the arm test, the arm is held up nice and strong. So that peace is bringing about strength. It also means quiet. Peace does. And that's the kind of quiet which is different from a loud, noisy, raucous, upsetting kind of situation or kind of state, where it feels good when it's quiet. Now, we don't necessarily mean the kind of quiet where there is no noise, no sound whatsoever. It's not that. It's the kind of quiet where there is calmness, where you can be highly active in a state of peace, because there is an inner calm in that state. Now, how can we help to bring this about? How do we get out of it in the first place? The reason we get out of this state, into the states of conflict that we're in, that produce so many problems, that produce the situations where we don't have peace, is because of opposing ideas. Primarily, the biggest idea that produces that state is an idea called fear. And fear is where you expect things to go wrong, where you expect to be hurt, or you expect danger, or you expect something like that. That's a state of fear. And that state of fear gives rise, then, to a couple different reactions. Neither one of them have to do with peace. One of the reactions is to run like crazy. And the other one is to fight. When you have, you know, when you talk about being a natural thing in the body to have a fight or flight response, there's also a peace response. That, you know, there's so little of it today that they don't even know that that's one of the natural results of the body. And I'm not talking about paralysis either. Paralysis is when you don't know which direction to go. But the peace state is where, regardless of what's going on around you, there is a sense of deep calmness inside, and whatever action you're taking is being taken from that state of calmness, from that state of deep peace within. And so you might seem to be extremely active and wild on the outside, but you're doing that on purpose and with purpose when you're acting from that state of peace within. This is the idea, for instance, this is the idea that is operating when a person learns how to be assertive. Okay? A person who learns how to be assertive has a particular part of themselves inside that they know is them, that they are sure of, that is a source of strength and deep calm inside, something like, if you like, the eye of a hurricane, that deep calm inside. And it is such a deep calm and such a deep peace that when they act assertively, not aggressively, but assertively, they are acting with purpose and for a purpose, and they accomplish that purpose, and they accomplish it in the easiest, most peaceful way possible. It is very interesting that assertiveness can bring about peace many, many times. It's like being assertive enough often to say no. That's being assertive. And when that's done from a peaceful state, it is extremely powerful. If it is done from a fear state, it doesn't have very much power. And the aggressive state is one where somebody's acting out of anger, and the reason people act out of anger is because they are afraid. They are afraid of not using anger. The only way they know how to get their point across or to act or to accomplish something is to use anger, to protect themselves, to defend themselves. And there are times when that may be appropriate. Of course, it's not the only way that somebody has to act. That's better than not acting at all. But there are better ways than that. And so there's a big difference between the person who is acting assertively and the one who is acting aggressively. Aggressiveness is always coming from a fear state. And it's done to protect. And it's done, maybe it has a good purpose within, but it's always coming from fear. And so it is inherently weakening. And we say, well, you know, look at all this power, look at all the strength, look at all the destruction somebody can do with anger. Folks, let me tell you about destruction and all that kind of stuff. Anybody can destroy. That doesn't take any great skill. Okay? I mean, anybody can pick up a weapon, or anybody can pick up a stick or something like that and hit and hurt. Now, big deal. That's no power in that. It seems like it from our eyes because we're so scared of it, but also nobody can be hit or hurt without their inner consent. So even the person that seems to be doing so much destruction is only doing it with the inner soul consent of the people involved. That doesn't absolve them, not at all. But it can only be done that way, which shows how little their power is. And over again, it's been shown where a person is coming from that state of peace, the person who's trying to hurt or harm can't touch them, won't touch them. Often will stop dead and turn around. And that state of peace often comes from that state of strength, which is a state of conviction. When there is conviction about something, very strong conviction, then there is a state of peace within that person. That's why it is no accident. I'll drop this one. It is no accident that many great leaders have had assassination attempts over and over again, and they don't work. They always miss them. Okay? Study your history. Many great leaders have, you know, people try to assassinate them and they always miss. Okay? Charles de Gaulle, my gosh, he was one of the ones that went through so many attempts in his life, never touched him. He lived to his ripe old age and ended and, you know, quit when he was ready in a peaceful, calm way. Why does that happen? It is because the state of peace within, which in this case is a state of strength based upon a firm conviction of a mission or a firm conviction of being right or doing right, that creates an aura, an actual aura of protection around one. And that's why malu has another word that we don't often associate with peace, but another meaning for it is protection. But it's not the protection that comes from fear. It's a natural protection that comes from being in a state of peace. And remember, that state of peace is a state where you are at one, you were talking personally, where you are at one with yourself. Your I is single, as one other great master said. You are not conflicted within yourself about your purposes, about yourself, about who you are, about what you are, about where you're going. Of course, that sounds like an ideal. And it is. Great. That's what ideals are for, something we can reach toward. And the closer we get to that, the more effective it becomes for us. It's not like we have to make a great leap from zero to, 100. We get better and better as we go along, as we move closer and closer to it. We get more and more peaceful within, and we get more and more effective without. Coming from that state of peace. Now, in practical ways, what can we do about it? How can we achieve that ourselves and have that sense of feeling within? There are some certain things that come that can happen. One of them and is to learn how to come in to the present moment. Learn how to be aware of this present moment in a sensory way. That means not just looking around, although that's good. A lot of people don't even do that, don't even see or notice their surroundings. So that's a good place to start. Being aware of your surroundings visually, being aware of your surroundings by sound, but being aware by touch, and being aware with your body, and being aware of your body. Being aware of your body. It is absolutely amazing, and all the people that I work with, how many of them are out of touch with their body. It is understandable, because there is a great learning that has often gone on in this life, growing up, that the world is a dangerous place, and that the present moment is a dangerous place. And in trying to draw away from that for self-protection, so one can survive, often one removes oneself into the head and away from the body. Till one, sometimes it happens then that a person isn't even aware of what's happening when they get upset, or whether they're under stress or not, or what the effects are of walking into a room, the effects on their body of different situations. They're totally unaware of that. And what happens when they think different thoughts? And it's because, for their own reasons of self-protection, they drew away from it. And yet, if they really want to grow, they really want to achieve peace of mind as well as peace of body, you've got to get back in touch with the body, and you've got to get in love with it. Yes?
I have to say something that really affirms what you're saying. They had a special on TV about people who have phobias. And when the doctor tries to take the person out who has the phobia, if the person is overcome with too much fear, they have a rubber band around their wrist, and they snap it to get that pain, and that brings them right back
into the present. That's one way to do it. Yeah, it'd be a lot nicer if they had a feather that would tickle them, but nevertheless, that's one way to get them back into the present. But that's the idea, because most of our conflicts come because we get out of the present, we get into the past, we get into the future, we get all conflicted about what we can do, what we can't do, what we should do, what we shouldn't do, what other people should do, what the world should be like, what it shouldn't be like. All of those produce conflicts. And so that brings us to another little way to think about. Getting into the present is very important. Getting in touch, really in touch with your body in a sensory way, is very important for helping to achieve a state of peace. But then the other way is to get rid of the inherent conflicts in your thinking. And some of those inherent conflicts are brought about, many of them are brought about by the word should. Okay? So as we often say, don't should on yourself. Okay? It produces all kinds of conflict, and it makes your life very unhappy. Because should implies inherently a conflict. If you say that person shouldn't do that, the reason that produces stress on your body and a conflict is because the person is doing that. And you know that. And you're aware of that. But you try to deny, put it out of existence by saying they shouldn't do it, but they are doing it, but they should do it, shouldn't, but they are, but they shouldn't, but they are, but they shouldn't, but they are. And that produces an ongoing, continuous conflict. Whether that applies to yourself or situation, a person, the past or the future, doesn't matter. That's what produces so much. So much of the conflict in the world that can lead to those feelings of unease and unrest that finally a person doesn't know what else to do with that, they go to go out and hit somebody. Now that means either hit somebody with their hand or hit somebody with a Sherman tank. You know, either way, they express it in some way, that violence, because of the internal conflict. If they weren't internally conflicted, they would not express that conflict in the outer world, which is one of the reasons for this order, is to help people learn how to create peace within so that we can create peace on the outside as well. But it's got to start within, has to begin, but it has to begin by doing these things, by changing the way one senses, by changing the way one thinks. And don't worry about changing the way you feel. If you change the way you think, you will automatically change the way you feel, because feelings follow thought. So you got two things to work with, just that's all. You got the body, which, and really it's awareness of the body and the present moment, and you've got the conflicted thoughts that you might have in your mind. When you become aware that you are thinking in a conflicted way, okay, just be aware and see what you can do in that moment to change it. Your subconscious learns very fast. It doesn't take much to do that. You just have to pay attention and do something. Okay? So you can create peace inside. And that peace that you create inside will automatically start creating peace around you. Now, it may not be easy. You may really have to put some effort toward it to bring your mind back to center over and over again for a while. That's okay. The price is cheap. The reward is great. It's worth doing that. Now, let's go on while we're still talking about this in a way. The other thing that comes along with peace very easily and naturally is love. And, of course, love has so many meanings in English. It's one of those words where love is used for all kinds of stuff, right? Everything for stuff that is the most highest, you might think of altruistic spiritual concept that's conceivable, all the way down to a vitamin deficiency in some of its symptoms. Right? Love. Let's go back to the Hawaiian again for this one, because it's such a rich language in these things. Aloha. And let's just get a reminder of that meaning. Alo is another thing. It means to share an experience. And oha means joy and growth. Okay. Ha is another term in here, which means the breath of life, which stands for the, if you like, the bioenergy or the ki or the mana, the power of life that we have. So what this has to do is love is sharing of joyful energy. That's love. That's why we can say to love is to be happy with. Love is the sharing of joyful energy. If it isn't joyful, folks, it isn't love. It might be something else. There might be good intent behind it. It's like when a parent thinks they're loving the child by being critical. They're not expressing love when they're doing that. They're expressing their desire to have the child act in a particular way. And not necessarily for the good of the child. They may be kidding themselves about that. On the other hand, that may just be the only way they know how. Because they love an ideal which they can imagine that child to be. And because they love that ideal, they try to mold the child to fit that ideal. So there may be love of the ideal. Okay. But love is not expressed by criticism. Just isn't. Doesn't work very well. Does not create a loving feeling in the child or a loving feeling in the parent. doesn't produce the lasting results that the parent wants. It's not very good for getting to that ideal. Okay? And all too often, that word love is used as a cover-up for all kinds of very personal and selfish ends. Love is a sharing of joyful energy. You know when you love someone or something. It's when thinking about it or being aware of it makes you feel good. That's when you love. When thinking about it or being aware of it makes you feel good. Now, in terms of people, say, oh, I love so-and-so, but they really cause me pain in this area and they really cause me pain in that area, and I can't stand the way they do that, and I wish they'd change this way and all those kinds of things. Well, what you do is you both love them and hate them. And we are amazing beings in that we're able to do that all at once. But you're loving that person when you're liking that person, and you're not loving them when you're not. And we just sometimes switch back and forth real fast and do a lot more of one than the other at particular times. And all that means is that sometimes you love them and sometimes you don't. Okay? And also, let me put it this way, sometimes you may be expressing that. Like with a child, you may love the child all the time, even while you're spanking them. But you're also expressing unloving. At the same time, you may be expressing loving. It's just which one takes dominance at a particular time. Okay? I used to spank my kids because I thought, I wouldn't dare now, but I thought at one time that was the way I had to do to make them behave, to make them be the way I wanted them to be, well, I thought it would make them happier. Oh, boy. it was the only way I knew how at one time. And then I really learned that that didn't work. And I learned how to operate with them in a loving way, in a cooperative way, in a friendly way. And from that moment on, I never touched them again. Didn't have to. Didn't touch them in any kind of anger. And we hugged a lot. And they became friends. The greatest friends I've got. To me, that's the highest form of love. It's friendship. I've heard people say, well, you know, that's a son, and you're the father, not a friend. Baloney. I'd much rather be the friend. Okay, I'll give up being a father if it takes that. Friendship is the highest form of love there is. Because that's a give and take. That's a sharing with a human being on an equal basis, regardless of their particular relationship to you in this particular life, okay, or their particular age. I've had some great three-year-old friends. Okay? Friends. Okay? A sharing of joyful energy. And when you do that, when you act toward people with love, like I said, I found out my kids behaved wonderfully. Always with anybody, there'll be times when they do things that you don't like, but that's much more your problem than theirs. Okay? When you operate from a loving basis and a peaceful basis, you're able to influence their behavior gently, cooperatively, lovingly. The love begins to cease when we begin to call another person or their behavior even wrong. When we start saying that what they're doing is wrong, what they are is wrong, or they're on the wrong path, or they're doing the wrong thing, and in that way criticizing them. Oh, that's wrong. Or here, or even when we come say, okay, that you're not doing that right. Okay, whatever, those gentle little things that we don't pay too much attention to still produce an effect. Still separate us even that little bit from loving. Because love is a connection. It is sharing joyful energy. And that doesn't just mean giving it. That doesn't just mean giving it. It means receiving it. I was working with a person recently. And this is interesting how the subconscious can jump here. I said to this person, you know, let's talk about love and let's tell me how much love you can receive. Because she was talking about wanting to receive more love. I said, how much love can you receive? Oh, she says, infinite. I says, okay, let's leave infinite alone because the conscious mind can't really conceive infinite. Let's get right down here, okay? I want you to imagine how many people can you receive love from? And she felt herself all clamp up. And she says, well, the question that comes up, she says, whether I can handle that much love. I said, okay, let's see. I want you to imagine one person, just one person, giving you a lot of love. And she closed right up and she says, I can't handle that. I said, that's a long way from infinite, isn't it? Okay? And so we had a basis to work from. And so the thing we began doing was helping her be able to receive love from one person. Now, when she's able to do that, we'll go to two. Okay? Until she can feel comfortable with that. You see, so often people think of themselves as excellent givers, but not receivers. And so when you can only give and you cannot receive, you're not quite loving. You're getting close, but it isn't quite love. Because love involves the receiving. Remember, it is a sharing of joyful energy. That's going two ways. And so you're only loving to the degree that you can share. You're really only loving to the degree that you can receive as well as give. If you receive a lot and don't give, you're not very loving either. It's no different than as if you give a lot and don't receive. Because that's blocking the people off from that return flow. Now, even if you have to start with the idea, the imagined idea of one person really loving you unconditionally, you know what that means? Unconditionally simply means no matter what you do, regardless of what you do, of how you act. That's unconditionally. You don't have to deserve it. You don't have to earn it. You don't have to be good. You have to do anything in particular. They just love you. Wow, heavy duty. Right? Sometimes that's even hard to imagine. But it's a good place to start. Because that's what love is. To the degree that you can experience that, that's what love is. If you have one person in your life who is sometimes friendly, that shows how much love you're able to handle. I mean, look around you. You get in this world what's coming out of you. This world is a reflection of what you are. If you have friends in this world, then you are obviously doing something right. Okay? If you have one friend, if you have a parakeet that likes you, okay, whatever. The fact that you can breathe shows the plants care about you. That's how much love you actually have and that you actually are expressing. If you're still here breathing, you're doing all right. It's a good place to start if nothing else is, that you can perceive is there. Right here, of course, you've got a lot of friends. But you've got to be able to perceive it, to enjoy it. So whatever love you experience in the world is love coming from you. But remember what that love is. Love is a sharing of joyful energy. Aloha.